And we both look so much younger, right?
That's only me. I look older now. You have not changed. I have one. Is this you in the West Virginia section of the state book at the Strawberry?
No.
Oh, okay.
I wrote that, you know, I wrote that essay, but
yeah.
No, that's not me. No, I was not, I was in a few parades, but I was never Queen of the Strawberry Festival.
All right, well, here's, this is, I have to ask this, I'm just blown away by it, because I hadn't gone to your website, I didn't even know that you had one, and maybe it was just like 2 days ago, I found this country.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That was like a mind blower. Tell me about that. Because everything, it was like, this is where it all comes from.
It's not exactly where it all comes from, but it is sort of a resource, it's like a resource bank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are certain photographs that I've used and certain things that I've looked at a long time. And of course, the work is not figuratively, literally real, but and some of it was after the fact. Some of it was sort of things I put together after the fact that sort of connected in an imagistic way. But I hope to expand that to include a whole thing on Lark and Termite, but that's in the future. Right now, I'm just, I haven't had a webmaster for a long time, and I didn't know how to do it, so I just found someone, and we're going to do some stuff.
That's really amazing. When I found the birthday cakes?
The pictures of the birthday cakes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were your...
I can't remember. I can't remember right now what novel the birthday cakes were in. Was it Motherkind?
Yeah.
There were a couple of those birthday cakes.
That's amazing. And then seeing the family pictures and I don't know. It was just like kind of like picking up some sort of stone or something and finding these things.
Yeah.
I was so impressed by it. But it also made me think a little bit of the kind of eerie feelings that I would get reading Sable. And do you know whether, have you ever read any of his
books? I like his work a lot. And the fake photographs.
Yeah.
I like the idea of using fake photographs. I mean, I've never used photographs before in a book, and this sort of happened by accident with Lark and Termite. But when I was researching the book, and I was actually, I think, at McDowell three years ago or something, and I was writing to travel book writers who'd written books on Korea and trying to just connect with someone on the internet, and this wonderful guy said that he was in Korea at the time. He would go to the tunnel and take photographs for me. So he took a series of color snapshots and mailed them to me. I'm sure he thought he'd never hear of me again. But when I gave Knopf, I gave them a bunch of research materials. The little moon picture that Termite is so attached to is something that I've had for ages. The drawing was a drawing that a friend of mine, Mary Sherman, gave me many, many years ago. And I had a series of photographs of the alley, where in fact I did see a boy 30 years ago, who in my mind became sort of the nexus for the story of Lark and Termite. And I also gave them Robert Nielsen's photographs. And they agreed to, I wanted to use that drawing of Mary's at first as the cover, but Knopf said no to that. Thankfully, I think, because I love the cover they came up with, it is going to be the UK cover of the book. But they took those color photographs, and I really just gave them as a sort of setting the scene, think about it. But they turned them into black and white, and they cropped them tighter and tighter as sort of the end of the book comes closer and closer. And I thought I like the way it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all that will be part of the secret country of Lark and Termite eventually.
I'm still kind of reeling from that. I don't know exactly why. I think it was just like, I think on some level it's really just the forthrightness of it I won't call it sort of like honesty of it, but as if to say, like, oh, read. out of my head out of nowhere.
Well, most things do, but if there's something that I have a literal representation of, you know, like the birthday cakes, that belongs in the secret country. And it is a secret country because, as you say, not that many people know to look at it.
I don't want you to figure that out. So then, just to finish on that, you're not really using those photographs as some sort of aid memoir or incitement to imagination.
No.
They usually come and confirm something that you...
Well, I only put those together for the website. I mean, I don't go looking up photographs of things in order to refresh my memory about them, because my memory of them is very contextualized and angular, and that's the sense memory that I work with. But I went back afterward and found these pictures and put them on the website.
Okay. Thanks for talking. Well, one of the things I just wanted to ask you to expound on, and we do this with people who have come more than once, just ask, when it comes to too large an arc of time, what have you been up to since the last time you were here?
Well, it was last year about 9 years ago when Motherkind came out. And this book, Lark and Termite, I've actually been working on it for probably 15 years, but because I had written part of it, and I had written part of Motherkind. And it was around, I don't know, 2000 or maybe 99 that I finally signed a contract with another publisher after Sam Lawrence died in 94. And it was for a two-book contract, and I had sort of plans for both the novels. And Knopf thought Motherkind seemed more marketable, and they asked me to finish that first. And as it turned out, it was best that I did, because I think that book, in a way, I think every book prepares the ground, you know, for the next one in a particular sense. So I finished that book and then went back to working on Lark and Termite. And then 4 years ago, I took a major sort of change of direction by accepting a job at Rutgers Newark, designing a new MFA program for them, which involved writing the proposal and getting it through several state agencies, and then actually starting the program 2 years ago. We now have 44 students. We have a great reading series called Writers at Newark that I curate, and courses that are connected to the series called Writers at Newark, Contemporary American Lit. We're working with that reading series as a basis for a lot of community outreach, working with several high schools in Newark. And that's a huge undertaking. Our students are probably the most diverse MFA group in the country. Almost half are students of color. Over half are non-traditional students, so they range in age from 21 to 60. Many of them have had careers. They have ongoing careers now. We do all of our classes at 5:30 and later so that people can actually have jobs and families and be in the program. And our students this year are publishing in McSweeney's and Grant and Young Voices and Paris Review. So it's very interesting. It's really too interesting. It's too compelling.
And it pulls you away from...
It does pull me away from writing. But I had kind of settled into writing in the summers anyway, even before I took that job. Because I think, you know, as I get either older or deeper into my own material, I really have to be kind of shut off from outside stimulus and forced to go to, say, writer's prison, where the meals are served and everyone's working and one feels very guilty if one isn't working, and there's isolation, and then there's a bit of community at night, you know, to sort of blunt the loneliness of it all a bit.
And you can sneak over to Skidmore.
Sneak over to Skidmore now and then.
And had I known that you were off in your little squirrel hole writing this stuff, gosh. And so I guess the next question, we'll probably talk around stuff like this in the general session. But I, and I'll probably use a line like this in one of my introductory notes, I don't think I've seen the book something that was going to garner the kind of attention it has, or is it, as one of my friends says, the wheel turns and sometimes, you know, it lands on you, but at other times where something of equal significance might not be heard?
You know, I don't know. I feel as though this book resolves more specifically. I always write in a very layered way, but I don't always resolve things as specifically as things are resolved in this book. And I think it connects with the reader in a very specific way, maybe because of that. I mean, intentionally, sometimes I leave things a bit more open. And while Lark and Termite certainly suggests a future beyond the book, it connects in so many ways, and most of those connects were not necessarily planned from the beginning. Because I think I work very much inside the material, and I let material dictate form and follow the material into the form, and that's very much what happened with this book. I didn't intend initially, it was going to be a short little book composed of Lark's voice and Noni's voice. And Noni's voice was going to be short fictions, sort of one or two page fictions. That was my initial plan. And it just got more and more and more complex. And from the time that I tried to sort of embrace the idea of working with parallel worlds with the 1950 sections and the 59 sections, it got endlessly complicated. And there were times when I despaired of ever sustaining those two worlds. And fortunately, I'm extremely persistent. And the book had a very compelling hold on me. I felt as though, you know, I just had to keep with it, you know, stay with it until I got there. And the ending of the book was a surprise to me. And, it, you know, I wanted to know who that boy was that I saw sitting in that chair 30 years ago, looking at an empty alley, holding this piece of blue dry cleaning bag in front of his face and blowing on it. And I wanted to know what he was doing. And this book answered that question, and it works with sort of the dimensionality of past, present, future in a way that I've always been fascinated with. But it resolves in a very particular way, and it suggests certain things that that I think have been surprising. I mean, you never know what reviewers are going to do, and I don't connect myself to that process. I mean, it's sort of about the book, and but the way I feel about it is that I'm glad kind of Lark and Termite are sort of on their way. You know, they're in transit.
This the whole thing about this piecing of yourself. I think, well, I basically see your point and agree with you about how this work could only come of your capacity to really learn how to pace yourself and remain persistent across 9 years of distractions and pulls in other directions, and to be able to not really fight form, but actually use, you know, perhaps the transitions and interruptions as maybe even design vehicles.
Well, I wish it had worked that way. I mean, I think it wasn't so much that the gaps in time were a help. It was more that it necessitated going over and over and over the work. And I'm very line-oriented, and many of the lines have remained the same from, you know, for years. But the layering and the way one thing connected to another, and the cutting up of the sections and the way they moved into one another did change over time.
And maybe it's a setup, because we'll probably again come back to this this afternoon. you've spoken in interviews more kind of factually, I guess, about how you came to incorporate the Korean material. And it wasn't part of the original design, it sort of discovered you or something in that order. But could you talk a little bit more about how you found it valuable strategically? How you found it useful as part of the expansion of the story?
Well, Lark's section of the book was the beginning of the book. Something about, I put his chair, bring his chair into the yard under the tree, and then Noni. And her first section of the book defines a lot of things about the town and what she knows and what's kept secret from her and what she thinks about Termite, what she thinks about herself. And she states in that first section that Termite's father was killed early in the Korean War, and that they never got his body back, and that they had to have the service around a flag that was folded up, which of course is an echo of what happened to Billy in Machine Dreams. But the world that I invented for the children was very much sort of West Virginia based, kind of living behind the across the tracks, kind of near the train yard and the empty alley and the river, and Termite's fascination with big sounds like trains, and his love in particular for this double railroad tunnel that's very similar to a lot of WPA constructed chiseled stone, almost monumental structures in West Virginia. And so there was this double railroad tunnel with this sort of double tracks that went across the river. And on September 30th, 1999, the AP, Martha Mendoza, and her team of AP reporters broke the story of No Gunnery, which had been hidden for 50 years. And there was a big color photograph on the cover of the Times with this stone tunnel that looked exactly like what I had been imagining in the world of these children. And I knew that his father had been killed in the Korean War early on, and I looked at that tunnel and I knew that was why they had never found him. And then I began doing a lot of research into that incident and the beginning of the Korean War in general, and kind of patterned everything that happens to Levitt after what happened. Factually, this did not factually happen, but it could have happened. And of course, the children that he's trying to help are counterparts, or Lark and Termite are echoes of them, or they are living counterparts of one another, since they must be about the same ages. Not the same ages, because Termite's being born at that time, and the boy is a kind of precursor of him. But the idea that Levitt sort of enters into the boy's perceptions momentarily in the beginning, and then more and more, and his senses expand as he grows closer to death, or to transition, or however we want to term that passage.
That's what's amazing to me, all these symmetries and transitions and impacts, action at a distance, powerful forces that go beyond the immediate. I think that's a thing that this is just it gives it tremendous depth. We can, again, come back to that a little bit more. I think we have to knock down to set this up over at the other place, but I have to just ask you, as a mountaineer, West Virginian, do you have any opinions on about the Steelers?
The Steelers?
Mm-hmm.
They don't stand a chance.